A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to Jokes with Mark Simmons, the podcast where I chat to other comedians about jokes they can't get to work. As always, I am joined by producer Joel.
Hey. How are you?
How's it going, Joel?
I'm good, Mark. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's nice to hear from you again.
I'm good. Always a pleasure.
I'm good, actually. Yeah. Had a nice walk today.
Oh, where'd you go?
We went up into Highgate Village and then and then discovered a little park I'd never seen before. And we had a walk around there. It was bloody lovely. Yeah, so I'm in good spirits today, but I'm due a nap. So let's do this.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
You mean you're due a nap?
I'm due a nap. I have a nap every day.
By who?
Well, next...
Not due one.
Well, by whoever's with me.
Why do you have a nap?
What do you mean? I'm tired.
Why are you tired?
I stay up late. So, like,
why?
I don't know. I seem to get more done if I stay up later. I don't know why. Just habit. What time do you go to bed?
Suspicious. I normally go to bed about 10:30.
10:30?
Yeah. And that's why in the morning I'll text you a question and then I won't hear about an answer for it until about 2:00 in the afternoon.
Because that's when I get up.
It's like working with someone on the other side of the world.
Oh, it is a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's nice, isn't it? It's a nice thought. I'm supposed to be coming back from Barbados today, Joel.
Oh, no.
Yeah. But that's not like an extravagant holiday. Someone was getting married, and I was the best man. But they didn't get married because it got cancelled.
No. That's sad.
Yeah. We'll come back with a tan. Joel, get lost. I can tan.
You've never tanned.
I have tanned.
No, there's no
I have tanned. I have. I need 2 weeks and I need a nice, steady progression counting down from factor 50. And then after a few days, factor 30, or whatever the next one is, and then I work my way down. I do tan. Thank you very much, Joel Grove.
But you don't like holidays?
No, I'd rather not be on holiday. Yeah, that's just,
yeah. Well, there you go.
Let's not go into that. but I've got some holiday jokes. You want to hear my jokes from... Holiday-related jokes, suntan-related jokes.
Love to.
This one never really worked that much. It was in my 2014 show, I believe. That's weird. My cupboard just opened for absolutely no reason.
Spooky.
Yeah. I've never had a tan. I think my sun cream's a huge factor.
Good.
That's one of them. And the other one was, I don't use skin protection anymore ever since I saw my girl... No. I don't use skin protection anymore ever since my girlfriend told me she's always been attracted to men that are well-read.
Very good.
Yeah, that's a very old one of mine.
There you go.
Bit of fun.
Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Speaking of fun...
This week, it's Nick Helm. We recorded for way too long because...
Way too
basically,
long.
Basically... Just a couple of mates catching up. It's too long for one episode. So you've got your normal episode here, haven't we, Joel?
We have.
If you want the extended hour and a half version, head over to Patreon. Patreon.com/jokeswithmark. And we're going to upload the full version there. So if you want to hear more, go to that one. Or if not, listen to this one. So
So when lockdown started, I had an idea that I would do like a series of photo stories about like how
I can't concentrate.
I had like you're so shy. I had an idea for a series of photos, which was basically it'll be me, and I'd be very lonely in my flat, and then I would answer the door, and then there'd be like this inflatable woman that arrived, and then it would be me chatting to this inflatable woman in my flat, and then we'd be sort of like getting on quite well, and then there'd be another knock on the door, and then this inflatable man would come, and then we'd just sort of like have this. We'd have like this awkward sort of like love triangle in my flat, where it'd be like I'd be in my kitchen, stood by the fridge, looking really awkward, and then they'd be getting on really well, and then it'd be like me on the sofa, just sort of like no one talking to me, and then this inflatable couple that are just, and then they'd be like, they'd end up fucking, and I'd be just there going, oh, and the idea is just that even when it's left to my own imagination, I still sort of like luck out, and you know, there's this thing. So I bought like this inflatable woman and this inflatable man, and they were like really cheap. They were like they're like stag do quality, right? Uh-huh. So they were like $6.99 each, and I bought them. And then I just thought when I had when I got the inflatable woman and I blew her up, I just thought there's no way anyone would think that I didn't fuck it. So I was just like, I might not go for that. So now what I've got is
I'm assuming you fucked that one.
Yeah, of course. I mean, if you see it, it's fit as a fiddle.
I mean, I think he's fucked too, to be honest.
he looks fucked. So I just put him on in the background of like all of my Zoom meetings. Most of the time, no one even notices until they release it.
It couldn't have been more perfect when you left earlier, because you were covering it. And then when you moved, it was just me and that. Brilliant.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah. That's like that's a joke that I haven't used or didn't work.
So how long has it been there? You just decided not. I think you should still do it.
It's been there since like almost the beginning of lockdown. As soon as I did my first ever thing, and no one mentions it.
So you bought it before lockdown.
No, I bought it.
It's all coming out now.
I bought it as soon as sort of like lockdown started, and then I was waiting for but I didn't have any way of taking photos from to do the shots I wanted to do, so I bought another tripod but I got it off eBay, and it took weeks to arrive, and then by that point my sort of like enthusiasm for the project sort of died.
Yeah.
And now I've just got this inflatable man sat behind me.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I just listened to your isolation song.
Oh yeah,
and I was just singing it before. It's quite catchy. Your one. I haven't listened to any of the others, but I'm assuming you're going to win.
The thing is, yeah, that was it. It was deliberately written to be like an earworm.
Yeah.
So it's like one of the things that I really enjoy about my songs is that people say, fucking hell, I can't stop singing it.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, yeah, no, it's good, right? But it's by design. I try and get earworms and stuff. But
you have to do that on your own then. So that must have taken a while.
It took a week. Yeah. So there was this isolation song contest. When does this come out?
I'm not sure. When's the isolation thing? When's the competition?
I think it closes on like the 23rd of...
Oh, it's a voting, is it?
What month are we in?
May.
It's just started. Yeah, so I think it finishes on the 23rd of May.
I'll be up for then.
Yeah, so it was... they said, do you want to do this isolation song contest? Because Eurovision isn't on this year.
Hmm.
And so Tom Taylor, who I don't think I've met in real life, but I may have.
Met him.
But... He seems lovely. Mm. Well, he is lovely. But he had this, he just messaged me and said, do you want to do the thing? I was just like, yeah, sure. I was like, yeah. He says, can you write a song for this thing? I was like, yeah. He goes, you can be in Finland or Russia. And I was just like, oh, I don't want to be Russia. Because, you know, the song writes itself and it's not a good one. Do you know what I mean? So I was just like... I'll be Finland because I felt like that was a bit more of a challenge. And then I realised that, you know, Neil Hannon from Divine Comedy was doing it. And I was like, oh, for fuck.
So I thought
it was going to be me in some, like, open spots. And I'd be like, walk in and out. And it'd be like, done it. But no, it was like, oh, it's actually really... It's like, yeah, there was sort of like some stakes to it. So, So I got a mate called Joe DaCosta, who he was in the last ever episode of Uncle. We met then. Oh, yeah. And he was in my band in the last episode. And we've just been in contact ever since, and we've become really good friends. And, he's just like this incredible musician.
Oh,
and so I just sort of like I wrote the song and then worked it out on my iPad and on guitar and stuff, but I'm not like a great guitar player, and so then I just sort of like sent him over and then he added bits and then we went back and forth on the music and then he sent me stuff and I edited it, and you know, it was like really, it's like a real, it's weird. It's just sort of like when you do have access to people, you don't. It's been much more collaborative since lockdown.
Yeah.
And so then also, and so the song that I wrote has got sort of like loads of facts about Finland.
Yeah. That's what I liked about it. But I haven't seen any others. Is that what other people did?
It's a mix, but like, yeah. But like, so from my point of view, it took 5 days solid. I started writing it on Monday.
Mm.
And then I thought I'll record it in a day and then I'll do the video in a day and then I'll send it on Wednesday. It just ate up an entire, which was good in a way, but I was so stressed about it.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to get it as good as possible. But like, but Joe was the one that was just like, you should do just like finish facts. And I was like, I've done so many songs that are just lists. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
And it's kind of like when you do stand up as well, when you kind of like hit on a subject, you kind of like go, right, I'll just write a list of all of my ideas about this subject. And then you try and sort of like, and Yeah, and so he was just sort of like, he just kept like going, oh, these are facts. And I'd sort of like gone on Wikipedia and stuff like that, but I wanted to write like a proper song. And Tom Taylor said that it was sort of like, it's a light entertainment show rather than a comedy show. So I wasn't even particularly aiming to write a funny song. Mm. And then Joe just sort of like pushed it. And then when Joe sort of pushed it, I sort of like was like, okay, right, let's, so it's a mix. It's but the funny stuff was really Joe pushing it, and all of like the musical stuff was me, which was weird because he's a musician.
The opposite. But
it's really good. And then I made the video in my flat. But it's great because everything that I made it with was just stuff that I had on my computer. You know, I had GarageBand and iMovie, a camera on my phone, used my tripod. It's good. And then Katie Pritchard sort of helped me with the edit because she does
that. Oh, did she? Oh, wicked.
Do you know her?
How do I know her? Oh, I gigged with her in the middle of nowhere once. I just thought she was brilliant. So she's stuck in my mind. And then my girlfriend was with me when we watched her then, and she loved her. And then we went to watch a show in Edinburgh, and then randomly she was in your musical.
Yeah, I hadn't met her before. I hadn't met her before Edinburgh, and I'd worked with her. We rehearsed in July, and then went up in August, and I hadn't seen her do stand up. I'd seen sort of like a couple of songs online. Kate would be good. She didn't really have that much to do in the show. But we just needed someone that was sort of like solid to sort of like do backing and stuff. And she was just, over-delivered. She was just incredible. And then we went to see her like 2 weeks into the festival. And like her show was just fucking incredible. Like me and Aaron, our tech, like our jaws hit the floor. We were just like, oh my God, she's insane.
Did you see it with a big audience? Because there wasn't many there. And it was so annoying because it deserved, that classic Free Fringe, just arseholes walked in that didn't get it. But she was.
Oh, it was Rams.
Good. I mean, not saying it's because of my tweet about it, but. She got me with the Spider song. The Spider song was just.
It was incredible. I think it was the best show I saw all month. I just thought it was I'd worked with her for like 6 weeks by that point. Mm. And then she just like bombarded you for like, you know, it was a 50-minute show, 45-minute show. It wasn't an hour.
It wasn't her first.
She was so good. And she's very creative. She's like an amazing musician. And she's just sort of like proactive. And so she sort of like writes songs and makes videos, and she does like about one music video a week. And so I was just like, can you just give me a hand with the edit? I don't know what I'm doing with iMovies. It's good because I've sort of like taught myself how to sort of like do stuff.
Yeah, I'm trying to learn on lockdown, but I don't know, I just keep getting distracted with other things. Because Mariana,
that's all right too.
She does editing, doesn't she? So it's ideal for her to teach me how to do it, but yeah, no. I've just got to find more stuff to edit.
All right too. Look, if you come out of this with like one or two extra skills that you didn't have that will help you in the long run, then that's fine, I think. You don't have to write a book, you know, and you have to write the Great British Novel, and you don't have to kind of like learn how to make sourdough. But at the end of this, like from my point of view, if at the end of this I can record music at home, which I'm doing, because I'm recording an album at the moment, so I'm sort of recording stuff into this mic and then sending it over to Andy, my producer. Mm. If I can learn how to do that, and if I can make music videos so that when I release my songs, I can sort of like, you know, illustrate them, and people prefer watching videos than just like audio links. So it's just kind of like, if you can kind of like, if I can do that by the end of this, then it just sets me up for. Because the technology's not going to go away.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? It will improve over the years, but it's not like it's just going to disappear. So you've just got to get on board and sort of like learn how to do it. Otherwise, you get left behind.
Yeah. What's that album? So is that stuff that you've done on stage before, or is it a separate thing?
It's a combination of new stuff, basically. Yeah, so it's sort of like, it's a combination of new stuff and then my last two shows.
Okay.
So there's sort of like eight songs from my last two shows, and then there's we've got like 24 tracks at the moment, and I'm just sort of like whittling it down into what I can finish. And I've got loads of demos from over the years, and I've got stuff from shows that I haven't done before. But basically, it's sort of a breakup album or a breakdown album where I had like a dodgy couple of years, and I just wrote all of these songs, and now I'm doing it, but I'm in kind of like, I'm in sort of a different headspace.
Yeah.
So it's sort of like, part of me just wants to just write new stuff that's like more upbeat and happy.
Yeah.
And part of me is just like, if I can just sort of like put that period of time in a time capsule, deal with it creatively, and then get it going.
Yeah.
Just before I met up with you, I did a show a couple of years ago called "There's Nothing You Can Do to Me That I Haven't Already Done to Myself." Right?
Yeah.
And it was sort of like a horror show, but without it being, they were like horror stories, but like personal horror stories. It was like a concept where it was kind of like, I want the artwork to be all like a horror movie, and I want to sort of like take people to sort of like quite a dark place, and it sort of like came together over like a few years, and then I kind of took it on tour. It's my first tour, and I did it. So I was just watching. And the very last time I performed, it was in Cardiff, after Machynlleth Festival a couple of years ago, and I'm watching through it, and fuck me, it's like watching a different person.
Really?
Like, it's so dark, and it's just so difficult to watch, because you just like go, I don't feel like that anymore.
Really?
It's like a raw. You're watching like a raw nerve.
That's the thing. That's what's weird, because to me, well, I don't say it's supposed to just doing, it's a performance, but with that was you, or more the things you're talking about.
The things I'm talking about, but also just it's not, I'm just going to close my window because I've got, there's builders outside. Hang on. It's not that it's me, it's just that the material came from like a personal place, you know? So it's not like when I'm on stage, obviously it's a persona, like you've got a persona, and we've all got personas when we go on stage. But when I watch it, it's just sort of like, it feels like I'm reliving some really dark moments. And there's just the material, it's not that it was a few years ago that I recorded it. So you're just watching it and you go, it's a performance. You're watching it and I'm like performing it and all that. But all of that stuff came from a really dark place. Like you can see, I'm just like, fucking hell. I can't believe that people let me go out and do it, really. Because it's just so dark.
Did you find it made it worse having to do it? Because sometimes people say it's therapeutic, but then like with Sean and his last show, he said he couldn't do it anymore because it was too, he just didn't want to have to keep getting into that place in his head.
I'm going through that at the moment because basically I'm meant to be finishing off my Phoenix from the Flames tour right now. And I just don't know if I want to, I feel like I've dealt with that. I felt like I wrote a show that really, well, so I've always had a persona. So when I sort of like started out, I would talk about depression, but it would mainly be like jokes about depression.
Yeah.
You know, so it'd be like a one liner, and it'd be, you know, stuff like, I suffer from depression. It's not the big things like war and famine and disease that gets me down. It's the little things like when you get home and you realize you've got to change your duvet case by yourself.
Yeah.
And you think, what's the fucking point? I might as well just sleep in the shit. Right?
You did that in Big Value, didn't you? I remember that.
Yeah. Because we did Big Value in 2010. I was talking to someone about that the other day.
Yeah.
But that's really a conversation to have off air.
Depends what it's about, but okay, yeah.
But like, all I can say is Kai Humphries is an absolute gentleman.
He is. I did the podcast with him recently. That was really nice.
Oh, he's incredible.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, genuinely just, you know, he, I just don't know how to put it, but like, he really stuck up for me when I needed someone to stick up for me. And I didn't ask him to. He just went out and it, you know, and that's actually quite rare in the industry, I think. Mm. He like stuck his neck out and kind of like, and he didn't worry about offending people on my behalf. Do you know what I mean? So I thought he was, and it, you know, he was good. I think he's brilliant. But anyway, so when we started, so I used to just do sort of like jokes about depression that were sort of like that, that came from a real place, but they're more like, you can do that as a joke.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Rather than you're discussing a thing, you're making a joke about a thing.
Yeah. So you're not emotionally invested in it when it's just a one-liner. Whereas
no, it's just sort of like something. I was depressed one day and I noticed how much I hated doing my duvet and changing my duvet cover. And then you wrote a joke about it, and then you go, "That's it. That's that." That, you know. Hmm. Whereas, as I got better as a comedian, you end up just sort of like standing on stage and going, right, well, I've got a platform. So what do I actually want to talk about? So then I wrote a really dark show that was literally, it was about a breakdown, about my breakdown. But when I'm watching it back, I was in the middle of a breakdown.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm sort of on stage every night making fun of this breakdown that I've had.
Right. So yeah.
Without
so
you realizing I'm actually having it.
You know? Oh Christ!
So that's difficult. So when I did Phoenix from the Flames, and then when I did Live at the Apollo, because it's such a mainstream audience, you know, I talk about sort of like depression and suicidal thoughts and stuff like that, but not like in any great detail. But there was this, not a huge backlash, but like there were people that were just like that couldn't differentiate the difference between talking about a thing and making fun of a thing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, I suffer from depression. I have dark thoughts. So I write about it and I perform it on stage, and that's how I deal with it. And then you have other people that say, you're not allowed to talk about that. You know, and you go, well, I am. I'm allowed to talk about anything. You don't have to watch it, I'm allowed to talk about it.
You know? It's like they think, to them, you've just gone, you're a comedian, you write, you think, oh, that's a funny thing to write a joke about. But that's what it's like when I did a show, and I briefly had two jokes about having Crohn's disease. And the amount of times after the show, people come up to me with Crohn's going, have you actually got it? Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's just like, why would I write that?
Yes. Why would that even come into my mind? Like, I didn't know what it was before I got it.
And it's also sort of like, it's such a specific like demographic of people to make feel shit for coming to see your show. Do you know what I mean? It's just by the way, if anyone's got Crohn's disease, I've got a personal grudge against you and I'm going to make some jokes about it so that you feel bad at everyone else's expense. It's kind of like, it doesn't make sense. And also to actually go to the effort of going online and messaging a person without at any point thinking, why did they say it?
And there's a link there. There's a link between like mental health and people get abuse online. Like that's, you're just fueling.
At no point did they sort of like consider, well, maybe there was a reason for the material, but also maybe I'm adding to a problem that I don't really understand that well. So when I did Phoenix from the Flames, I just very, what I wanted to do was just set everything, not like I didn't come out and say I'm setting the record straight, but I wanted to just write a show that was totally honest about how I feel about my mental health and how I'm dealing with it, or how I was dealing with it at the time, in like a positive way, but also to just come out and just like, so that there would be no doubt in anyone's head that these weren't just jokes. I was making a comedy show out of something that was actually very personal and difficult for me. Because philosophy, my approach to comedy is that the more personal you try and be about stuff, the more people will relate to it. Yeah. And the more general you are about stuff, or crowd-pleasy, then I think people feel like you're pandering to them. And some stuff works for other comedians and it doesn't work for others. So kind of like, I don't have a problem with other styles of comedy, but what I do is I try and just be really personal about myself and then let other people kind of like go, oh, I felt like that. And then you kind of like, it makes people feel less alone because you go, you know, if your hero Nick Helm can stand on stage and talk about his problems, then maybe that will help you. And so like Phoenix from the Flames was sort of like a reaction to just a couple of comments, but I was just like, if there is any doubt in anyone's head that I am I'm attacking vulnerable people or attacking anyone with, you know, depression or mental health issues, if there's any doubt in anyone's head, I just want to set that absolutely clear that this is all coming from a completely genuine place. And Phoenix from the Flames tour was just like it came from I think it was post breakdown, you know.
Yeah,
that one feels like that's me drawing a line under that period in my life. So it's actually quite a positive show, even though it talks about suicide and mental health and depression and being isolated. Hello. But it feels like it was like me drawing a line under it. And when I took it on tour at the end of 2019, just like the feedback was like incredible, because it was people were coming up saying, I suffer from depression, I suffer from mental health. And I'd meet people and I'd talk to them. And it was just sort of like a really kind of like positive experience for me and for them. And it was, I just thought that it was what I wanted to achieve with the thing. And then because we sold so well, it was just like, well, we'll extend the tour. And so then we're into 2020 and it's kind of like, yeah, we'll extend the tour. And now we've got these dates and it's just like, I reckon I can do this up till, June. That's fine. But now we're looking at tour dates in 2021. And you're like, well, I wrote it at the beginning of 2019. So I've dealt with it for a year in 2019. Now I'm not going to be able to do it again for 2020. And so you're like, it's like, I've moved on. I've moved on personally from the material. And so I like going back to what you said about Sean, it's just kind of like, it's true. It's just sort of like, I am in a better place and I don't know how I feel about digging through that material again.
So for your mental health wise, but also is it more difficult performance wise to get back into the same performance space of delivering it? Or do you think that doesn't, you can fake that?
You get into a flow, don't you? You get into, there's kind of like, if you have to revisit old material, then it's kind of like you go, oh, it takes you a while to sort of like remember it. And then it's sort of like you're remembering the words, but then you're also trying to remember how you actually performed it. And a lot of the physical stuff is how you sell stuff. And it's kind of like, you're just sort of like, when you're in the middle of it, it's sort of second nature. But as soon as you have a break from it, and it's the same with performing in general, but when you're performing specific bits, when you have a break from it, it takes, I don't know if you can really ever go back exactly to the way it was. And what you want to do is you want to stay in your flow rather than trying to recreate a flow. And you don't want to be kind of, you don't want there to be like a middleman of you trying to recreate you in 2019, and 2021. You want to still make it relevant and immediate to you there. But the thing is, it's not just like the material that's from 2019. And this is what the job is as well. You know, people tour shows for years and years. But it's not just like recreating the material from 2019. But like, hopefully the way that time works is that you improve. So it's kind of like, if you take the subject matter out, just as being a comedian and a performer, But I think we're all going to be shit after this, aren't we?
Which is nice, isn't it? It's like, level playing field.
It's a level playing field where we're all sort of like doing open spots again. It's just kind of like, it's like, who's fucking hard. Have you done any Zoom gigs? It's just no. Like, it really recreates the feel of being in a fucking club. It's incredible. Fucking hell. It's like you do your gig like this at a screen and you can't hear any feedback. You can't hear the audience, can't see the audience. You do your gig, and at the end of it, you switch off your computer and you're on your own in your flat and you just go, oh, God. It's so bleak. It's so bleak. I just bought a flat before this, and now it's just like you go, oh God, that's like all my savings. Do you know what I mean? So you just like go, oh great, well, so I'm sort of like here and there you can get to do gigs, and then there's like, but there's a lot of charity stuff that's going around, and you go, yeah.
With the Phoenix, when you wrote Phoenix to the Flames, right?
Phoenix from the Flames.
From the Flames, sorry.
I think it's Phoenix from the Flames. I can't remember.
It's the opposite vibe, isn't it?
Phoenix to the Flames.
You're not coming out of the depression.
That's more of a comedy title though, isn't it? Phoenix to the Flames. I should have called it that.
So when you were writing it, and so you're conscious you don't want people to misunderstand what you're getting at, like they did on Live at Apollo.
But it's only a few people. It was right. But it got to me because it's just sort of like, go on.
Was that on your mind when you wrote it? So did you have any bits that you dropped because you thought like, oh, they might misread that? No, or do you trust your audience? So if they're buying tickets to see you.
I think it's sort of idiot-proof now. That show was. Do you know what I mean? It was just like, I think the show I did before, there was maybe a little bit of kind of like a grey area where people might not have known where I was coming from. But I think this show, I've made it very explicit that this show is about this. And I sort of guide people through it. And in actual fact, looking at this show from 2017 that I did, I am very much, it's me sort of bridging a gap between being in persona and talking about something personal. And I think with Phoenix from the Flames, what I largely did was I just dropped the persona. I think the first half is my persona, which is interesting because when you do it in Edinburgh, you do an hour.
Yeah.
So the only stuff I dropped from my Edinburgh show was stuff I dropped for time, you know? So it was never sort of like, what actually, when you go on tour, I just put an interval. I didn't have a support act, so I just put an interval in the middle. And then what actually, I was just like, well, where do I put an interval? And then I put an interval after the second song. And then what actually happened was then it just split this hour into two definite halves. The first half is me very much like, this is the Nick Helm persona. And then the second half is me sort of like going, all right, guys, got to cut the bullshit. This is me. Right. And then I sort of like, this is me laid bare. And then it's kind of, and it's really weird because it obviously wasn't that by design. As soon as you put a break in the middle, it turned into this show. And then when I added those two extra bits of material in, it sort of clarified some bits and there were some callbacks that I put in. And then it just felt like the show it was meant to be. The Edinburgh show was good, but the tour show was kind of like the show that it could be.
Yeah.
And I was just, I just thought it turned into something really good. But it's a difficult one about revisiting something from that long ago.
Yeah. Can you remember any bits that you dropped from that tour?
I know that I dropped a whole bit about Robbie Williams from the Edinburgh show that went back in the tour, and it really made loads of sense. It was great.
Okay.
Which was, Robbie Williams had an album out called Heavy Entertainment.
Aye.
And And I had a TV show called Heavy Entertainment, and then he released an album called Heavy Entertainment.
Oh, he released it after you, right?
Yeah, like that was what was sort of like, you know, I was going through a breakdown, and I was in a very, very dark place. And then all of a sudden, I got these people that were sending me like messages going, "Oh, what Robbie's called this show?" And I was just like, "This isn't helping." And you go on Google, and he just sort of like obliterated. You know, I had a TV show that I was really proud of, but it didn't really get a huge audience. And Robbie Williams is obviously semi-internationally famous, and didn't quite break America. But but he's got this show called Say It Again.
Slam.
Well, no, but it's funny. He follows me. He follows me on Instagram. And right. I mean, this is a bit of material that I dropped from Edinburgh, and then I put in the show. Right. So basically. I was in the midst of a very dark place, and then he released an album called Heavy Entertainment, and it just made me feel, it crushed me, right? And everyone was messaging me saying, "Have you done this thing?" And I was just like, I don't want to kind of like publicly say anything, and I'll be the bigger man, and I won't mention it, right? But I heard from someone that he was aware of this. He was aware that there was a show, right? So fucking hang on. How did I get the story right? So he released this thing, and then loads of people like were messaging me saying, "Oh yeah, Robbie Williams." And I was just like, "Oh fuck!" And then eventually it got to like the 100th tweet. And I was just like, "Oh God, I know, all right, I know." Right? Every time I open Twitter, someone new is telling me about how Robbie Williams has called his new tour Heavy Entertainment. So I just wrote, "Yes." I didn't at him, didn't do anything. I just wrote, "Yes, Robbie fucking Williams." Right? I call myself Nick fucking Elm on Twitter. Right?
Yeah.
I just wrote, "Yes, Robbie fucking Williams." I was like, "That'll deal with it." Right. But, you know, you just it's just like, it's such a ridiculous thing. My mum's a Robbie Williams fan. Do you know what I mean? It's just like, it's just a ridiculous thing where you just like go, well, what are the chances, right? And I don't think anything of it. And then it gets to Christmas and someone says, have you read Robbie's book? And I was like, well, no, of course I've not read Robbie's book. And they go, "You're in it," right? Oh. Of course. "You're in it," right? And I haven't got it saved. I haven't got the page saved, I don't think. It's a Christmas book that was written by someone else who's obviously a massive Robbie Williams fan, right? I got this from a charity shop.
So this isn't an official one?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. But someone else wrote it.
Robbie Williams by Chris Heath. Reveal Robbie Williams by Chris Heath. And I think what it is that he spent a year with Robbie Williams, and it's kind of like Robbie hasn't sat down and typed it, but he's sort of like...
Yeah, yeah.
He's sort of... It's a year in the life. I haven't read it. But somebody just took like screenshots of their Kindle and they sent it to me, and I read it, and it's just sort of horrible, you know. You go, "Oh man," and he's sort of like he's looked his name up on Twitter. He's seen that I've written Robbie fucking Williams, taken personal insult to it, and he's written about me in his book, which, to be fair, will be read by millions of people, right? And it's just sort of like, I've got like, your sound has gone completely, right?
Oh, has it?
There you go.
Oh, I'll talk to Matt, that's what it was.
Yeah, so he's written this thing. So I didn't, no shots were fired from me, all right? I did was I made a TV show called Heavy Entertainment. Then he released an album called Heavy Entertainment. And it's just like, and then everyone bombarded me. So all I did was I wrote Robbie fucking Williams. Then he writes about me in his fucking book, right? And then you get people like going, oh, you've done a thing. So I was like, fucking
hell.
What's
he saying though? Like, annoyed at you?
He's like saying that no one's, to be fair, I've never heard of this young Nick Helm fella, but he seemed to take very personal offence at the fact that it's just sort of like he's treating me like I'm this absolute piece of shit. And he's like going, poor Helm. Some of his fans came to his aid, but you know, it's kind of like this very patronising. It's horrible, right?
That's really horrible, especially that you came up with it first.
He's Robbie Williams, you know.
Oh,
and in the book, God. In the book, he says. But in the book, he says, "I didn't steal the title Heavy Entertainment off of Nick," which I don't believe he did, right? I think there's a production company in London called Heavy Entertainment. It's not the craziest thing to go Light Entertainment, Heavy Entertainment. Do you know what I mean? It's not the craziest thing. It was a perfect title for the TV show, right? But he goes, I didn't steal the title Heavy Entertainment off of Nick. What I did was I Googled it to see if anyone else. I came up with the title and then I Googled it to see if anyone else had used it, and then I saw that Nick had. And then you went on and called your album Heavy Entertainment anyway. Do you know what I mean? So he's like saying, so it's like he's saying that he individually did think of it, right? But he said he individually thought of it himself. But it's just like if I wrote a joke and then I found out that you were doing the same joke, I would drop the joke. Do you know what I mean?
He hadn't even done it yet. He didn't even need to drop it.
No, exactly. It was sort of like work in progress, right? Oh. So anyway, so there was that. So then I started doing my Phoenix from the Flames work in progress, and all the Edinburgh posters were made and everything like that. And then someone came up to me and they says, you know, Robbie's got a song called Phoenix from the Flames.
You're joking.
And I was like, holy fuck. Oh, no. So then
that's perfect.
Then I was just like, oh, I've got to write a bit, and that's like the punchline, which is which is sort of like I have
this. Has he got one called Phoenix to the Flames?
No, he hasn't. but it's this thing where it's just kind of like I have this massive rant about what I don't care. you know what I mean? It's like being angry with Ronald McDonald, or do you know what I mean? or Colonel Sanders, do you know what I mean? It's a fiction. But I'm so hungry. I'm just mentioning food icons. But it's like being angry with Mickey Mouse. It's sort of like he's like a fictional character in a way. I've never gone out and personally attacked him or anything like that. He wrote about me in his fucking book. What, little Nick Helm with his couple of thousand followers on Twitter? It's just like, come on, mate. It was just kind of like this thing. So I have this big go at it, and then I undercut it all by saying, oh yeah, but I didn't know that Robbie had a song called Phoenix from the Flames, right? And so that happened, and then I was just about to go on. So that's the show, right? That's in the show. That I dropped that from Edinburgh, and then I start the second half of my show with that, and it kind of gets people in. Although I am going to be doing this show again, so hopefully no one listens to this podcast, right?
No, I've only got a few listeners.
And
they hate you.
And they hate me.
Big Robbie Williams fans.
I'm a hateable person, right? But the thing was, I was just about to go on stage in Edinburgh. I was backstage, and then all of a sudden my phone flashes, and it's Instagram, and it says, Robbie Williams is following you. And I'm like... and my blood goes cold, and I'm just like, why is Robbie Williams following me on Instagram? And so Robbie Williams is following me on Instagram. I go on, I do the show. Obviously someone has seen the show and sort of like either messaged him or like gone to him directly and said, oh, it's sort of like, but the thing is, the way I framed it is it's self-deprecating. It's basically saying, how can anyone steal the title of someone else's thing? And then at the end, it's like, oh, I did that by accident.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Perfect.
And so it's kind of like, it's not mean, it's not mean-spirited or anything like that. But Robbie Williams is following me on Instagram and someone sort of like, told, I mean, I'm just like, going, oh God, what's this? And so the next day I take my driver, my tech Aaron, we're driving and he needs to piss on the side of the road. So he gets out and I take a photo of him having a piss in the bushes, right? And I put it on Instagram, right? And then all of a sudden, my phone flashes up, and Robbie Williams has commented on it, and he's like saying, I see you're doing a show called Phoenix from the Flames. I'm thinking of calling my next album Phoenix from the Flames. That's right, Helm. I'm career fucking you, or something like along those lines, right?
Oh my God!
And I'm sat there going, why would he call his new album Phoenix from the Flames after a song that he recorded in like 1998? You know, it's like, doesn't he remember that he's got a song called Phoenix from the Flames? Why would he, do you know what I mean? Why would he bring out a new album called Phoenix from the Flames when he's already, I mean, I don't know how many songs he's recorded, but I remember the titles of my songs. It was just like, but I didn't write that. And I was just like, okay, the van broke down. And
is this story all in the show?
No. Oh, this is what this happened while we were on tour. Okay. This is what happened when we were on tour.
So the van broke down.
The van broke down. We ended up being kind of like stranded in. I can't remember where we were stranded. It wasn't. Maybe it was. I don't think it was Manchester. But we were stranded. We were stranded just at the van broke down just as we left Scotland. Oh, it was Newcastle. We were stranded in Newcastle. And Robbie Williams has texted me saying that he's career fucking me. And I'm just like, mate, my van broke down and I'm staying in a travel lodge 500 miles away from my house. I think my career is fucked. I said, I'm way ahead of you on the career fucking, mate. and he liked it. And now we're... now we're best mates. But it was just kind of like this thing. But it's just like, it's surreal because you just like go, I don't want a fucking feud with Robbie Williams. It's fucking insane. And then I do like a Christmas charity gig called Fuckfest.
I did it.
You did it. Mm. And so I run this thing and it was kind of like, it's good to make money for charity. It's sort of like a nice thing to do, and it's sort of like a nice thing for the comedians to do because it's kind of like the whole point of it is that there's no pressure to perform well. It's like we're all tired and it's the end of the year and we're making money for charity, and so the comedians can come on and do anything they want. So we do it, and we just the last few years I've ended singing Angels, but we sing I'm Loving Fuckfest instead. It used to be my song when we were young and we were getting drunk in O'Neill's. They'd play Angels and I would sing it like at the top of my lungs. It was like a death metal voice. That's who we are, baby Jack Sean. And that was like my thing. And so we sing, we were just like, well, I wonder if Robbie is free to come along and do Fuckfest. And not only was he not free, he was doing a Christmas extravaganza at Wembley on the same night. And you just like go, you are career fucking me, mate. You really are like the biggest gig. And it was like my little Christmas charity gig up against Robbie Williams' Christmas Wonderland. Fuck yeah, it's great. It's funny.
Nicholas
Helmsworth.
Great stuff. Hashtag Aruga to Nick Helm. Hashtag Aruga to everybody who is listening.
Yes, go and subscribe. 5 stars. Tweet about how much you love
Joel?
The show.
Where can they give us 5 stars, Joel?
iTunes. if you can't access iTunes, they can do it on iTunes. If you can't access iTunes, tweet about how much you like the show. And don't forget,
I'm pretty sure you patreon.com just said, if you can't access iTunes.
If you can't access iTunes, tweet about the show instead. Yeah. Because if you can't access
everyone, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Have I gone dead?
If you can't, what's going on? If you can't access iTunes, Mark.
Yeah.
If you can't access iTunes, maybe you've got an Android
I don't
phone.
Know what's happening?
Maybe you've got an Android phone or something. Then yeah. The alternative to giving 5 stars would be to do a nice tweet. And everyone listening understood that. Everyone listening understood that perfectly clear, and I understood it, and it made sense.
Are you repeating stuff, or am I getting you? Is there a weird echo thing?
Hello, hello. No. I'm not repeating myself. Self.
What's happening? Were you?
I did at the end just then for a bit of fun.
No, I just kept getting a repeat. There's something weird to this line. That was really odd. I'm assuming everyone's going to think I'm mad because they're going to hear it from your audio.
They will.
Yeah. Oh, that's going to sound awful.
See you next
week. 5 stars, though. Okie dokie. Cool. Good stuff. Thanks, everybody. Anything more from you, Joel?
Nothing more from me, Mark. Nothing more from me, Mark. Anything more from you, Mark? Anything more from you, Mark?
Nothing more from me, Joel. Hashtag Awooga. Hashtag Awooga, everyone.
Bye, 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 bye.
You knobhead. good stuff.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.